This morning, in our series we are calling Living Above the Circumstances, I want to speak about coping with disabilities. In many ways, living with a disability is easier today than ever before. The technological advances, legal protections, and government support of those so suffering have certainly increased their quality of life. But that doesn't make accepting a disability any easier. Now, we tend to think of disabilities only in the area of permanent physical impairments that are very outwardly obvious. We see someone and we say, that is a disabled person. And certainly these are the most challenging disabilities, but I don't want us to restrict our thinking only in those terms. Sometimes disability can be temporary. It might be an illness or an injury that keeps us in a hospital or in a home for a time. It may be a financial setback that leaves us unable to do the things we used to do, the things we want to do. It may be a natural disaster that destroys our home or our possessions. All of these fall under the category of a disability because you are now unable to do that which you used to do, that which you like to do, that which you want to do. Now, sometimes these can be the consequences of our own choices. I think of Moses, spent 40 years in the Midian desert. Why? Because he killed an Egyptian and he had to run for his life. Think about Jonah. You know, that three-day submarine ride in the belly of the fish? That was his own doing. He could blame nobody but himself for the situation that he was in. But there are other times when things just happen. And it's not the person's responsibility. It has nothing to do with anything they've done or not done. Think of Joseph. Many times in his life, he was a victim of circumstances. His brother sold him as a slave to a foreign land. His master's wife lied about him and had him thrown into prison. The king's cupbearer, once he was released, forgot about Joseph for 2 years, left him there in prison. How about Job? Job's whole world was turned upside down, and despite three friends trying to convince him otherwise, it wasn't his own doing. We know now what it was, but at the time he didn't know. And as we turn to Paul's letter to the Philippians, we learn of a disability that the apostle was suffering at the time that he wrote this. Verse 12 says, "Now I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel." The key phrase here is, "What has happened to me?" It describes a vexing restriction in his life at that time. See, more than anything else, Paul's desire was to preach the gospel where it had not yet been heard. He was a pioneer missionary. He was not interested in following up where somebody else had already been. He wanted new lands. He wanted new areas where he could proclaim the gospel of Jesus. And his target, at the top of his bucket list, you might say, he wanted to preach in Rome. Rome was the hub. It was the capital. It was where things happened. And if Paul could conquer Rome for Christ, millions of people would come to faith in him. It was critically important in Paul's agenda. We read in Acts 19, verse 21, he's telling the Christians, "After I've been to Jerusalem, I must visit Rome also." He always had that in the back of his mind. He wrote to the Roman Christians from the city of Corinth. And in Romans 1:15, he says, "That's why I'm so eager to preach the gospel also to you who are at Rome." That was his driving desire, his motivation. He wanted to reach Rome. And he had it all planned out. He shared with the Romans, "Once I finish this mission of mercy in Jerusalem, I'm coming to see you." And he wasn't stopping there. He had his sights set on Spain. that was the far western frontier of the Roman Empire at that time. And he wanted to take the gospel there. But something happened. Paul wanted to go to Rome as a preacher. He ended up going to Rome as a prisoner. And we won't go into it all, but if you're interested in the things that happened in verse 12, in the book of Acts, from about the middle of chapter 21 through the end of 28, the end of the book, you see the things that happened. Paul went to Jerusalem after taking up a collection from the churches that he had planted because the Christians in Jerusalem were suffering. There was a famine. Most of these Jewish Christians had been disowned because of their faith in Christ. They were really suffering, and so Paul took up a collection in all these other churches and brought it to those suffering saints. While he was there, he decided to go to the temple. We tend to forget this, but Paul was a Jew. He was born Jewish. He was grew up in the Jewish education and culture, and he never lost that. And so he goes to the temple. Well, while he's there, some Jews who recognized who he was, and they didn't like what he was doing by proclaiming this Messiah who had come, they stirred up a riot. Of course, when you stir up a riot in Jerusalem, the Romans come in because they want to keep the peace. And so they really saved Paul's life because they were about to, this mob was about to kill him. And they snatch him out of there, and they say, what's wrong here? What's this man done? And they lied about him. They said, this man brought a Gentile into the area that only Jews are allowed to go, and he deserves to die. Well, that hadn't happened. And it wasn't too long to figure out that there was no evidence of such crime. In fact, there wasn't evidence of anything. There was no reason for the Romans to hold him. But Paul learned that there was a plot, that as soon as the Romans let him go, the Jews were going to be there and they're going to kill him. So Paul exercised his rights as a Roman citizen, and he said, I appeal my case to Caesar. Now what that did was in essence put him in protective custody. But what he did not foresee was how long he would be in protective custody. He was taken down to Caesarea from Jerusalem, and he sat there for 2 years. And then finally, at the end of 2 years, they put him on a ship to go to Rome so that his appeal could be heard to Caesar. And while he's on this ship, they run into a storm. They're lost at sea. They wind up on a deserted island. No, there wasn't the professor and Marianne and Gilligan. Different island. They were there for a few months until the weather broke, and then he finally made his way to Rome, and he was placed under house arrest. Now, Paul was not in a jail cell when he wrote this letter, but he could not leave his house, and he was chained to a Roman guard 24 hours a day. And he had to wait another 2 years before his case was heard. And it was during that period of time that he writes this letter to the Philippians. Can you imagine what that must have been like for somebody like Paul? I mean, if there was ever a type A personality in the Bible, he's it. He wants to be on the go. He wants to be out there proclaiming the gospel in places that had not been heard. But here he is locked up in Rome under house arrest. This was his disability at the time because he was not able to minister the way he felt that he was called to, the way he wanted to. He was literally stuck, unable to do much of anything. And I'm sure that at one time or another, we have all dealt with disabilities. Some temporary, some of you are dealing with permanent disabilities. Some of them are physical, but not always. Sometimes they are financial, sometimes they're emotional. But there are times in which we feel like we're put on a shelf or we're locked up in a box. And we're unable to do the things that we want to do, even for the Lord. Ray Edmond writes, "So much of life seems utterly meaningless, even miserable, without rhyme or reason, right or wrong, and justice least of all. There is an abundance everywhere of turmoil and trouble, tragedy and tears, inhumanity and injustice, sickness and sorrow, so that anyone could reason that the universe is entirely unreasonable, a miserable mess, a ghastly joke. There is so much that just happens. No apparent plan or purpose, only pain, perplexity, loneliness instead of love, handicap instead of help, false hopes instead of far horizons, pain instead of pleasure, inactivity instead of activity, sobs instead of song, four walls instead of four freedoms, darkness instead of daylight, futility instead of fulfillment. These happen to all of us." And there's that word again, happen. Happenings, it's another word for circumstances, those things that stand around us in life. You know, three times in this short letter to the Philippians, Paul talks about his circumstances. This is the first. "These things that have happened to me have really served to advance the gospel," he writes. In chapter 4, verse 11, he says, "I've learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am." And later in that same verse, he goes on to say, "In every and any circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled or going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need." Now, the one thing you see in all three instances here, Paul is demonstrating that his circumstances did not determine the level of his joy. His circumstances did not determine the level of his peace. He was able to live above his circumstances. They say, how can a person think like that? Well, it's really not that difficult. It's not complicated, but it all depends on how we approach our circumstances. See, we can ask ourselves, why did this happen to me? Or we can ask, how has this resulted for some benefit God had in mind? Do you notice the different focus? If we focus on ourselves, we're going to have a big giant pity party. And oh, that's so horrible. I just can't take it. It's all about me. And you're going to be miserable. You're probably going to make everybody around you miserable too. To the point they don't want to be around you. And then you're alone and then you're more miserable. Kind of snowballs that way. But when we focus on how can God use this? How can God use this in my life? How can God use this to affect the lives of others? You see, Paul did not find his joy in ideal circumstances. He found his joy in winning others to Christ. And if the circumstances he was in helped further that mission, all the better. Even if it wasn't all that pleasant for him. That word that he uses to advance the gospel, it's a military word. It means a pioneer advance. These were army engineers that would go in before the invading army and they would clear the way. They might build a temporary bridge if they needed to or clear out an area so that the army could pass through. And that's what Paul's talking about here. The circumstances in his life were opening new areas of ministry that he would never have guessed. He would never have imagined. He had discovered the secret that things happened to him in order that things might happen in him. And those things happened in him so that God could do things through him. We need that kind of a mindset in whatever challenge we face, whatever circumstances we're in. We need to say, God, what are you doing in me? And what can you do through me? Again, the focus is on God and it's on others. It's not on ourselves. You find somebody that is just miserable all the time, and I would bet their focus is on themselves. But when we're able to take our eyes off of ourselves, we will even see that the most difficult situations of life, God can be working in us, and He can work through us to affect the lives of others. And that's what Paul cared about. It wasn't about his comfort. It wasn't about his own personal agenda. It was, how can God use me, even in the worst situation, to bring others to Christ? Now, Paul goes on to point out a varying reaction of others to his plight, beginning in verse 13. As a result of all these things that had happened to him, it has become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else that I'm in chains for Christ. Because of my chains, most of the brothers in the Lord have been encouraged to speak the word of God more courageously and fearlessly. It is true, some preach Christ out of envy and rivalry, but others out of goodwill. The latter do so in love, knowing that I am put here in defense of the gospel. The former preach Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing they can stir trouble for me while I'm in chains. He mentions first that the whole palace guard was becoming aware that he was in chains for Christ. Now, history tells us there were about 9,000 men that served in the Praetorian Guard. That was the elite forces that were bodyguards for the emperor and did his special work. And one of their jobs was to guard his prisoners, of which Paul was one. And so every day Paul was chained, probably wrist to wrist, to a Roman guard. And they would change every 6 hours. So throughout the course of a day, four different guards were literally chained to Paul. Talk about a captive audience. He knew they weren't going anywhere for 6 hours. And you can bet that he was using opportunities to share the gospel with these men. They listened as he prayed. They listened as he worshiped and praised God. And we know that he did that anywhere. He didn't have to be in church to do that. There were people that came to visit him and they overheard those conversations. They probably heard him dictating letters just like this letter to the Philippian church. And as time passed, more and more of these guards were becoming aware. You know that prisoner, Paul, waiting to get his case heard? He's no normal criminal. In fact, I don't know if he's a criminal at all. I think there's something up with this. It became the talk around the palace. Men who would never darken the door of a church could not get away from Paul. And Paul used that opportunity to share Christ with them. You know, if you find yourself in a hospital bed or a nursing home, or maybe you have medical care coming to your own home, you have an opportunity to reach the very ones who are giving your care. If you're going through a tough time at work, your employer and your employees, they're watching to see how you react. Not just when things are going well. I mean, anybody can say praise Jesus when things are going well. What about those tough days? What about those times when circumstances are bad? That's when your testimony is going to shine. If something happens to your home, you know, you may lose your home or your car or it's damaged. Trust me, your neighbors are watching. And they want to see, all right, here's this good church lady. Here's this good Christian man. How are they going to react now? And that can make all the difference in the world. People that we could never get into the doors of a church, we have a beautiful opportunity to share the truth of Christ with because of our bad circumstances. Remember last week we considered how Paul and Silas responded to being disrespected? I mean, they were literally victims of racism. They were singled out because of their Jewishness. They were falsely accused. They were wrongfully arrested. They were illegally treated. But what did they do? They didn't moan and groan. They didn't threaten to sue. They didn't form a group to protest. No, they sang praises to God so that everybody could hear it. Paul loved captive audiences. He was in that jail in Philippi. None of those guys could get away. Boy, he was going to make them all hear. And when the opportunity came, that Philippian jailer went straight to them and said, "How can I be saved?" How do you think he knew that? Because he was listening. I guarantee you, if they had been moaning and groaning, he would never have asked them that question. Now, the response gets varied. Not by the people you would imagine. The unbelievers were pretty impressed with Paul and how he was handling himself. It was with the Christians that it was a varying response. Now, some, we are told, stepped up. They realized Paul was out of commission. He wasn't able to get out there and proclaim the gospel, and so they did, and they did it fearlessly. I want you to notice here, the word is not preach. In the Greek, it is the word for everyday normal conversation. And that's what you're called to do. You don't have to be a preacher to share Christ. In fact, you're probably going to be listened to more often if you're not one. But they were out there sharing the gospel. They were spreading the word. But then there were those who were still proclaiming the gospel, but they were doing it with different motives. They didn't like Paul. They didn't like the way he looked. From what history tells us, he wasn't much to look at. Maybe they didn't like how he preached. Did you know that Paul is the only person in history that it is proven he bored somebody to death by his preaching? Literally. I think it was in Ephesus. He got going. You know how preachers can get going sometimes. No amens there. He got going and said, right around midnight, a guy named Eutychus is sitting in the window, fell asleep. Fell right out of the window from a second floor onto the hard ground below, and he was dead, bored to death. It's like there was a sign in a church one time. It had the little markers with names on it, and a little boy went to his dad and said, What are those names? And the father said, "Well, son, these are men who died in the service." And the little boy said, "Is that the morning or the evening service?" Now, I don't know why these people didn't like Paul. I don't know what their problem was. But they were working to make his life miserable. You ever had somebody do that in your life? They just seem to delight in making your life miserable. That's what they were doing. The verse here says they were preaching out of selfish ambition. The King James word uses the word contention. And in the original, that meant to canvass for office, to get people to support you. Now, doesn't that sound familiar? I mean, seriously, how many of you are sick to death of political campaigns, right? The best thing we can say is thankfully they're over for now. But you know that sometimes happens in church too. A lot of church politics goes on. And people are trying to get their way, and so they're getting people on my side, and there's people on the other side, and it's a mess. And obviously that's what people were doing here. Now, some will say these were false teachers. You know, these were the Judaizers who were trying to promote legalism, or they were somehow perverting the gospel. I don't think so, because in other letters, Paul severely denounces false teachers. Here he says they're proclaiming Christ. Maybe they did so with a little different theological perspective. You know, maybe they just didn't agree eye to eye on every little thing. And that can happen too. You know, sometimes we're guilty of this. I say we. I'll make that more personal. Sometimes I'm guilty of this. It's easy when you hear about a church that's maybe a little bigger than yours, or a preacher who's having more success than you're having, and something happens and you say, "Aw, isn't that too bad? Couldn't happen to a nicer guy." Yeah, we're tempted that way. There's times when you allow your circumstances to make you feel a little envy or jealousy. We may not go out of our way to make people's life miserable like these folks were, but the same attitude is there, at which point we're no better. Now my point is this, when we're the ones coping with disabilities, people are going to react to you differently. And I'm ashamed to say it, but even amongst our brothers and sisters in Christ, people are going to react differently. You know, some are going to be very supportive and helpful. Others are going to wonder what you did wrong to deserve this. Or they're going to delight in your misery, which just exposes how miserable they are. We can't control how other people act toward us. We're not responsible for their words and their actions. And how they respond to us and those circumstances, it doesn't say anything about us. It says everything about them. And we need to remind ourselves of that so that we're not carrying around a lot of unnecessary guilt or stress over what so-and-so said or what so-and-so did. Paul's going to tell us in the next verse how we need to respond. Verse 18, what does it matter? If I were to translate that, I would say, so what? Who cares? What difference does it make? The important thing is that in every way, from false motives or true, Christ is preached, and because of this, I rejoice. His attitude was a vivacious rejoicing, even in spite of his disability at that time, even in spite of the fact that people were trying to make his life miserable, he said, I don't care. I don't care what other people think. I don't care what other people say or do. And that's the kind of attitude we need. I'll be honest with you, I have never come across a generation of people with such thin skin as Americans today. Every little thing offends them. And they're just incapacitated. They can't function because things didn't go their way. Oh, it's so terrible. I need a safe place. Oh, come on. I guarantee you, if you're a follower of Christ, you'd better start getting a thick skin. Because there are going to be people out there that are going to try to make your life miserable. And they'll use whatever tactic they can. No, it's not fair. No, it's not right. And I'm not making excuses for them. What I am saying is you let God judge them. He'll do a much better job than we can. And don't let that determine your level of joy. Don't let other people have that much control over you. Do you realize that? You come across somebody and say, oh, they just made me feel terrible. Well, you've just given them control over your life. Well, they made me do this. They control you. The truth is, you control yourself. And you decide how you're going to act and how you're going to react. You decide what you do and what you don't do. Now, I'm not suggesting that Paul never got hurt. I'm not suggesting that these people trying to make his life miserable didn't get to him. I like what Stuart Briscoe writes. He says, whatever we may think of Paul, he was no alabaster saint on a pedestal. The real Paul had a temper that got heated. He had feelings that got hurt. He was no computerized theological machine churning out inspired writings, but a very human individual who needed as much love as the next man. You can't hurt a computer's feelings. You can't grieve a theological concept, but you can destroy a man. Paul was destructible, but he wasn't destroyed. And it wasn't for the lack of somebody trying. the perspective he had discovered allowed him to say that he didn't really mind what happened to him as long as nothing happened to stop the gospel. Because in his understanding, the message preached mattered more than the man preaching. Did you get that? The message preached matters more than the man preaching. When people say things to you, focus on what they say. Is it true? Is it right? Is it something I need to change? If it's none of the above, forget about it. And don't worry about who's saying it. God spoke through a donkey to Balaam. And what was said was important. Satan sometimes speaks through people around us, and what they say is not important. Let it go. What does it matter? So what? Don't let that determine your state of mind. I'm sure Paul was hurt by the fact that these brethren rejected some aspects of the gospel that he held dear. But he coped with that too. He didn't insist that they dot his I's and cross his T's just the way he does. And I think we need some more of that in our fellowship with others, that they don't always have to agree with us. People may not like us. So what? Is your goal in life to have everybody like you? Good luck with that. If you ever get there, I probably don't want to know you. Because, boy, you'd be twisted like a pretzel. Trying to please everybody, it'll drive you nuts. Don't let it bother you. Because when we do, we clutter our minds. And we're trying to please everybody. And we're trying to be all things to all people. You can't do it. Keep your focus where it needs to be. And that's not on you. You keep your focus on the Lord. And notice, this is a matter of choice. Paul says, I will rejoice. It's an action. You can't do happy. You either are or you aren't. It's a feeling. It's an emotion. You can't control that. But you can rejoice. It's an action. It's saying, I praise you, Lord, for what's happening in my life. I don't understand it. I don't even like it. But I praise you for it. That's rising above the circumstances. That's getting above the clouds. And that's where we need to live. And we need to stop focusing on ourselves and look at others. Our own comfort, our bruised feelings, our reputations, our misunderstood motives, they're all insignificant compared to Christ being proclaimed and us being a good testimony for Him. When we look at our circumstances as God-given opportunities for the furtherance of the gospel, we're going to rejoice at what God is going to do instead of complaining about what God did not do. It'll change our attitude. It'll change our lives. You might find yourself right now in a situation that's far less than ideal. Not only has life become difficult and frustrating, it's just becoming more so day by day. Life at this time might be borderline unbearable for you. The great temptation is to allow that to embitter us, to turn us into someone who lives under a dark cloud where doom and gloom characterize our outlook. Life is hard. Can we get to that point where we accept that? Life is hard. It is not going to be easy. Nowhere is that ever promised in God's word. Those preachers who preach it are lying. Life is not fair. And it never will be. There are always people out there that are going to try to knock you down. They're going to try to make you miserable. And there are circumstances outside of your control you cannot change. The only thing you can control is your response. And that's the good news. There is hope beyond our circumstances. We can live above them, just like Paul did. But to do that, Christ must be our central focus. He alone can empower us to live our lives above the adversity. Our external circumstances may not change. That disability we're experiencing may be permanent. It may never get better. But God wants to work in you, and he wants to work through you. And we will be changed. And we will make a difference in the lives of others as well. Because to the people closest to us, our joy, despite our circumstances, is going to be nothing short of heroic. And it's going to make our own lives not only bearable, but worthwhile. And that's the good news. We can get above those circumstances of life. And I invite you to do that starting today.